Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. It is now or never. That debt is fraud. And you have come to the only show that actually gives you what you need to know and need to understand to get our government back. This is where we provide you content. This is where we actually invite you to invoke an appeal to heaven. And we actually have an organization, Loud and Liberty, actually has a prayer circle where if you want to dial in, the information is on the talk radio podcast page, or I should say Red State Talk Radio podcast page on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. So by all means, please, consider yourself, invited, and you would get to meet some very good Christian patriots. These guys are great. Anyway, with that, let me just tell you that this is why we do the content, so we can learn, pray, and act. On top of that, it's all about compliance to the Constitution. Now, one of the things I don't say enough, we just had Jerry Wistrand on, and what we want to do is remind you, he needs support. He is fighting the Republican Party. What I want to do, and as a matter of fact, I'm looking forward to trying to get a few conversations with a few different states, central committee or state chairs, to talk about, their party, why they're allowing their state to go blue or what have you. Because I honestly, I would love to talk to the state chair of Missouri. Now, I'm going to throw it out there before we get back into the content here. When we look at the different state chairs, the state chair for Missouri, let me see here, right down to this. So the state chair is Peter Kinder, as I understand it. And so I'd love to give him a call and talk to him about, what does he believe the most important thing that the party should be doing and that type of stuff. And if I can get an on-air radio interview with him and others, maybe we can start talking about the elephant in the room. And yesterday, as we were going through the Kentucky resolutions, there's an elephant in the room. Sometimes I like to refer to it as a landmine or, this little secret or Easter egg, if anybody remembers or understands what those are. But there's this little gem that's actually tucked away or not tucked away in the Constitution that has really caused a problem because we've allowed the federal government to take that gem. There's probably nothing better. I mean, as a matter of fact, I went into a little diatribe ending the show yesterday. I know I went to Sean, and Sean looked at the time and he goes, what an insult. You give me 3 seconds? So, Sean, welcome back. And welcome back, Tammy. Yay, we got Tammy back today.
Yep.
And Sean, welcome back.
Good to be here, sir.
All right. So, Sean, did you have anything that you would like to discuss regarding the state's control over who would be immigrating to their state? Based on the Constitution.
I just felt like it was a little confusing, and it's probably because of where we are now in the current situation, but how the United States is responsible, the federal government is responsible for defending and securing the nation, but the states hold the power to immigrate and decide who comes into their state. So when we have states like California and Minnesota and places like that, where they're trying to use this as a power dynamic politically, it might cause some concern for who actually holds the authority of the borders.
Yeah, and there's obviously a lot of issues. This is something that can easily be marginalized as far as a discussion, talking about who can come in, who can't come in, and because we can look at history. I mean, we allowed this, the states kind of allowed, you know, they controlled people coming in. And as a matter of fact, historically, they had bans on specific religions. If you were Islamic or Hindu or Confucius or what have you, there were certain religions that states would not allow those people from those cultures to come in at all. They were perceived as a threat. They still should be perceived as a threat, at least some of them. But in some respects, some of it had more to do with ignorance because it wasn't Christian. And so I believe that we can get to a point, though, where we can actually say there are certain cultures that are an absolute threat. And as a matter of fact, you know, and when we look at, you know, scriptures or what have you, it is never a good idea to allow the enemy in your home. Never. We have a responsibility to protect our families from the enemy, and letting them come in, I mean, it's putting blood on our hands. So when we look at the states, but looking at this in the vacuum of the Constitutional Convention, the discussion of letting the federal government dictate who would come into those states, into each individual state, that would have kept the Constitution from being ratified. Because the states were sovereign, and there were certain states that gravitated towards the Francos, or I should say the French. There were a lot of French coming into Virginia, maybe in the southern states as well. I don't know, but I do know that certain states had a preference for certain people, and they wanted those people because they came with skills, they came with a culture, they came with something that, you know, was not foreign to them. And they felt safe allowing these people in. America, because these problems occurred with the overrunning of our immigration system, such as the Irish migration because of the potato famine and so forth, the federal government said, you know what, we're going to take over this for you. They didn't amend the Constitution, so they just took over. And they did a pretty decent job. And for the most part, the way I think that they started regulating policies was they aligned with friends of the United States and enemies of the United States. And so they started allowing certain nations to come in. They never stepped on the state's ability to ban religions. So in other words, if you look at post-Civil War, you will find states still banning Islamists. But the federal government would allow Japanese and Chinese and others to start coming in. But some of these hard bans on religion were still being maintained. I believe that most of the states had hard bans on Islam until the very end of the 1800s, which is one of the reasons why there was never a mosque built in the United States during, you know, its first 100-plus years. I think the very first mosque, you could probably look this up, the very first mosque built in America was in the 1930s, I think. If you understand a mosque, the whole point of building a mosque, that means that you have enough Islamists in an area or you have enough Muslims in an area that will dictate the building of a mosque because of the financial investment. And in their language, I think they believe that they have dominion, or they have enough people that would create dominion over that physical area of that mosque, kind of like the parish of a, you know, a church or what have you, the congregation. And so most people don't understand that when they talk about dominion, they're talking about dominion in shaping laws and controlling the law. That is a whole part of Islam, which is one of the reasons why they were banned. And people thought, well, you know, they're just like us, right? No. No, they're not like us. They're not like anybody. If they're like anybody, they are like the communists. They want total control, and they want you to live their law. Their supreme law is Islam. And they do not recognize the Constitution, which is why I've been saying for years and years and years, they should never have been given access to citizenship. They can't truthfully affirm or swear to become a citizen There's no way they will ever abjure their allegiance to Allah and abjure their allegiance to the Sharia law and look at the Constitution as the supreme law of the land and support and defend it. They can't do it. Therefore, how can they be citizens in maintaining our constitutional republic? They become an enemy within us. But I forgive me for grandstanding. Back to this problem, what would you suggest?
Well, I agree with you on the Islamic problem because, I mean, it's stated in their religious codes, in their laws, and just like in Sharia law, it's totally incompatible. And how can a state allow people to come in and be citizens of their state if they're not eligible to be citizens of the United States?
Yeah, so
then you'd have like dual citizens. They'd be a citizen of a state, but not a citizen of the United States. Isn't that against the contract? I mean, how can you be two things at one time?
No, I get that. And that creates other problems because the free flow of commerce and the free flow of people between the states. Absolutely. Right. And as a matter of fact, this is why I think that, you know, this problem has been ignored, and it has been ignored for a purpose because over the past half century, if not longer, and actually, I believe that if you go back prior to the World War II, the migrant workers, they had a system built for that. And when the migrant workers came to America during the Depression, they were equally in the same, you know, same boat, and many of them stayed. They didn't go back. They were the same boat in Mexico, and the odds were better here than they were down there because America actually started creating, you know, coupons and so forth where you had the ability to actually buy certain things. So I believe that when you look at why, so how do I say this? If you look at why they had to deport millions of people after World War II, go look up the, I think it's the Wetback Project. I think that was what it was called. This is actually cited in our petition number 3 regarding the invasion that Eisenhower, on the heels of Truman, basically moving forward with the deportation of Mexicans, literally ended up deporting, I believe, over a million Mexicans who came here and decided to stay. So basically, you got these migrant workers that were supposed to go back on their own. They didn't. Now, they came in with a legitimate reason. We weren't having our borders overran. They came in and, you know, we let them in because we had this really open migrant worker system. That started getting exploited. And actually, with the drug running and the new era of capitalism of drugs, all of a sudden, there were more incentives in bringing people in, you know, as well as, you know, human trafficking, sex trafficking, that type of stuff, where our borders were literally under assault of moving people into America. Bad actors, bad people, what have you. Some people come in here for freedom. But most of the people that were running people, they weren't doing this because they were trying to help humanity. So anyway, when we look at this system, the adults, the parties to the compact being the states, I believe that as they start discussing the violations of the Constitution in the Republic review process, the states will have to determine, will they want to actually make an amendment to the Constitution, or will they actually create a system that they create for themselves to allow an interface with the federal government so that the federal government can do its job and the states can do their job. I think that there are different paths forward. You know, when I talk and I throw things on the table, the last thing I want to do is come off like I'm the king or I'm in charge. Even the president's not in charge of this. I say this all the time. A constitutional president would all constantly be going back to the state legislatures and go, hey, you body legislatures, you've got a lot of problems to fix, and you better start talking about these things. Here's what you got to have on your table. Because if it's a problem, if it's causing a problem, then it needs to be at least in the queue. I get the fact that we, you know, want to do a triage, right? We want to determine what is going to kill us today and what isn't going to kill us but maybe infect us, and then those things that are just, you know, they're nuisances. You know, we want to take care of the priorities first. Get, you know, solve the big problems, then we get to the next ones to where we're finally, you know, finalizing on the nuances, or these nuisances, I should say, that we have to deal with. But the fact of the matter is, almost in every way, the federal government has breached the Constitution. They have ended up using it as a weapon against the states and the people. And so if anybody wants to think, oh, well, we need to give the federal government more power, then, you know, that person probably needs to have a competency test. In my eyes, I think that person doesn't really have the cognitive ability to, you know, to be, I don't, not to be free, but maybe they shouldn't be voting. Because you have to start challenging that type of paradigm. Is that right, Tammy?
Yeah, I 100% agree.
Okay. All right. All right. So with that, folks, we're still reading the Kentucky resolutions. And Tammy, welcome back again. And this, we put you in the front of the queue because, as you know, Sean has read the first four resolutions. And that first one basically laid out this authority that the federal government doesn't have over the migration of citizens and this fact of citizens itself. And as a matter of fact, when we really turn to it, they actually didn't create a really good system. And I think that was just because they were just too busy doing the big things, the more important things, that they really looked into this. But they did actually, if you look at a Uniform Act of Naturalization, I think it was the 1795, maybe the 1790, where they actually talked about the states being able to deny a person of U.S. citizenship. That if a person ended up going to, you know, another state where they were denied citizenship in the state that they were currently in, and they said, you know what, I really want to be a citizen, and they go to the neighboring state, or they jump across several states so that, you know, nobody knows that they're there, you know, that they were denied or anything like that, technically it states in the law that for that person to then become a citizen once being denied by another state, the appeal has to be made to the state that denied them access to citizenship before that person can become a citizen. In other words, the states have that kind of power, and they should have that kind of power over citizenship. That was the paradigm in the very beginning. So that's why when people were landing in certain states, you know, they didn't want to become a resident of that state if they knew that they didn't like French people, if they didn't like Germans, they needed to move to another state where they could actually find friends and become a citizen. That makes sense, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay, so let's go ahead and dive into Resolution 5. And if I interrupt you, just, you know, folks, it's for a reason. But anyway, go ahead, Tammy. Go ahead.
Okay. Resolve that in addition to the general principle as well as the express declaration that powers not delegated are reserved, another and more special provision inserted in the Constitution from abundant caution has declared that the migration or importation of such persons as any of the states now existing shall think proper to admit shall not be prohibited by the Congress prior to the year 1808.
Okay, right there. That's a hot one. So that's a hot one. So that was the compromise over slavery. And that issue right there was that the states could not, the federal government could not regulate any persons being imported that were slaves. And so at 1808, this is when the federal government is granted the ability to regulate. So the language in the Constitution does not come right out and say what and why they're doing it. This is one of the reasons why you have to read the ratification debates, and you have to read the Constitutional Convention, the notes on the Constitutional Convention,
to dive into what the heck are they talking about. This whole point was all about stopping the slave trade. To keep clear, states do have the ability to go to a village that is being impoverished, or going to a village that has nothing but geniuses, and say, we want to import you into the United States, we want to bring you into our state and make you citizens of the United States. States have the authority, because it's not delegated to the federal government. So things not delegated are reserved to the states. So the states actually have the authority to not only control one by one immigration of individuals, they have the ability to import either refugees or people that would really benefit their state. This kind of opens up that old can of worms that Sean and I were talking about. But the real point is this. Had the states been told that the federal government would determine who would be best for them, that right there would have given the states enough pause to say, we're not going to ratify this. We don't want you to have any type of control over us. We are sovereign states. So states were free to skin their knees and, you know, get boo-boos, make mistakes, but the federal government was not free to do that. They weren't free to bring in refugees. They're not free. So, folks, when we talk about invaders, there are invaders that the states, or I should say the federal government, has deliberately allowed through a porous border to come in here. They have not only allowed invaders to come in one by one on their own, they have went out and deliberately imported invaders. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, so now, Sean, I think you can kind of see why the importation of persons was only given to regulate the state's ability to do this and not give them the power to do it. Because if you actually read in Article 1, Section 9, I think it's Section 1 and 4, what have you, that right there it basically says that the federal government will have the ability to regulate the state's importation of persons, not granting them any power to import people themselves. So anyway, go ahead and finish this resolution, Tammy. Go ahead.
Okay. That this Commonwealth does admit the migration of alien friends, described as the subject of the said act concerning aliens, that a provision against prohibiting their migration is a provision against all acts equivalent thereto, or it would be nugatory, that to remove them when migrated is equivalent to a prohibition of their migration, and is therefore contrary to the said provision of the Constitution and void.
Okay. I think he's pretty clear there. Now, we get into the next resolution, which kind of deals with the imprisonment and so forth. So this is kind of interesting, where Thomas Jefferson dives into, and it's obviously a longer resolution. So anyway, Sean, did you have any comments regarding the importation and the aliens with Resolution 5?
No, sir.
Okay.
I was going to say something along the lines of, when the federal government controls immigration, we get situations like we have in Minnesota. Uh-huh. And where was the other place where we had the issue? Oh, Afghanistan.
Well, Detroit.
When we did the withdrawal from Afghanistan and brought all those Afghanis back here, uh-huh, under the protection and whatever of the federal government, and dropped them into people's communities, whether they wanted them there or not.
Right. Well, we also had Detroit. I mean, if you look at Detroit, they started bringing refugees in from the Syria borders. I mean, they've been deliberately importing combatants, importing people that have no business, no desire to ever submit themselves to a land of liberty, that their whole purpose in life is to, you know, grow and grow and grow as a body people to take over government. I can't say anything positive other than the fact that, wow, you know, apropos time for a break, because there was this pause. Okay, so great. We're going to go into a break. And so when we come back, let's just do a round robin to see if there's any other comments from Sean or Tammy, and then we can move into the next resolution. Folks, we will be right back after this short break. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
And so we're back, and I will kind of get the round robin going here. So, Sean, any other go? I mean, I know you just contributed, but is there anything else you wanted to contribute regarding this concept that the state should have the control over who they admit and who they don't admit?
No, just like I was saying, I mean, if you get some nefarious actors in the states, but then it comes back to us as the people. We have to be more vigilant about what our representatives are doing.
Right, but I think that at this point in time, it was, if you really look at the nations of the world, they were monolithic. In other words, you could literally ban Mohammedans because they were monolithic bad actors. They had no love of liberty. They wanted dominance and control. So they would have been hostile to what we were trying to do here. They don't come. Now, when we look at Europe, we looked at the different monarchical cultures. Germany was this, you know, this new Protestant culture, or the Germanic states. We look at the rest of Europe, and we can see that they were, each of the nations were monolithic. Does that make sense culturally and so forth? That makes sense, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's exactly what people talk about, and that's what a lot of people don't understand about American society.
Right.
Is you go to another country, and everybody, for the most part, until just recently, like you said, it's monolithic. You have Italians or Austrians or
yes,
what have you.
Right. And, you know, if anybody has ever seen the movie about diversity and equality in the United States, where they create either a cartoon where a white kid gets to start the race early so that they have a given advantage, because America creates that. They actually create a white kid advantage, and that all other kids of a different race do not have that same advantage. And that's an outright lie, and it's a huge deception, because what they're doing is they're making it seem like this problem is American and American only. But they're only presenting this to American kids, because American kids don't understand that if you go to Japan, if your parents had to go to Japan, and they, you know, wanted to migrate there, become citizens, and so forth, you would literally feel the wrath of cultural warfare being unaccepted as white people in Japan. You go to Germany, and your fellow white people in Germany would basically keep you down because they see you as a foreigner. Every foreign person that goes to a nation is it because it is their culture to advance people of their kind. So to break through those barriers is always going to be Herculean. Only in America, where, you know, the next generation, it gets easier, because we don't necessarily judge a person, maybe by their language, maybe by, you know, their race in some respects. But most of that stuff has gone by the wayside because we've been able to, I say, melt down the majority of the biases that exist in all other cultures. In America, most of those have been melted down. Do you agree, Tammy?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And so let me ask you this. Is there anything, you know, that you want to contribute to the dialogue regarding states controlling their immigration? Because let's look at Wyoming. I mean, Wyoming has its own kind of culture. Do you want to, would you want to actually, because there are cultures out there that are a bunch of sniveling, whiny babies. Do you think they would do well in Wyoming?
No, not at all.
Right. It gets too cold here. Can we put heaters throughout the mountains? Whatever, right? I mean, they want all the civilization. They want to have, you know, a city symphony. You know, they want to have...
So I guess I'm confused. Explain to me, if this is left to the states because it's not been enumerated to the government, then what is the federal government's role then? What exactly is their role in this?
What is their role in this? So their role in this is to ensure that when a person is migrating to the United States, to whatever state they're going to, that they are allowed to come in. That, in other words, I've talked about this. How does a person immigrate to the United States? They go to the embassy, or they can contact online. They can contact the state itself. This would probably be a job for the Secretary of the State, like in your case, Chuck Gray. They would contact Chuck Gray's office and say, we would like to immigrate. Me and my family would like to immigrate to the state of Wyoming. And Wyoming would then have its own parameters and standards of, okay, do you have any of these diseases? Have you had these inoculations? Blah, 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 right? So you guys would create your own standard of what that would be until the states work together on what the standard should be for all. The beautiful thing go ahead.
So the person that would be reaching out to the state individually saying, I want to migrate to Wyoming.
Yes.
And then they would be communicating with Wyoming. And then when they cross the border.
Okay, so then Wyoming. So once Wyoming authorizes that person entry, they would send notice to the federal government that this person is now authorized entry and they're migrating to the state of Wyoming. So that way, if they fly into Colorado International Airport, then they would then have their own transportation needs taken care of. Because it's on them. They're migrating. They're covering the cost to get there. Back in the old days, they'd buy a horse and a wagon. Once they got, you know, far enough west to where they could get a horse and wagon and then just start going across the plains, surviving on the bugs and critters, whatever they can eat, and get the water, get to where they're going, and then they, you know, they're there. But in those days, let me stop real quick.
Okay.
They did not have a mature immigration process for the first several decades. When you look at the migrations of the mid-1820s, 30s, and 40s, there were a lot of people migrating. I'll give you a good case in point because I know that when we look at the mass migration that was happening in America, a lot of it was religious. And so I know that the Mormon church had lots of immigrants coming in, and they were literally going to where that church was. There were other people that were just coming culturally at the same time, i.e. Irish people. They're coming from Ireland that were wanting to, you know, not for religious purposes, but they wanted to be with their kinfolk and, you know, be a part of that monolithic paradigm of those states. The original 13 states were far more monolithic than the states that followed. Every state that followed, I'll probably say that the states that followed probably after the Missouri Compromise became far less monolithic. And I just say that because they were so wide open that the only way people were going to get there is people were making the decisions to leave the state and their property that they had and go try to start anew in a Western state. Most of the people that were going into that Western state by that point in time were coming from different parts of Europe. You know, at that point in time, this push or, you know, being singular or what have you may have been still happening towards those monolithic states or those states of favor. But there were lots of people that said, you know what, I just want to start anew. And so that's those people who wanted to start anew came to America. They went to those states that were very happy to receive them. But it was not a mature process. It never became a mature process because they never saw the threat. They didn't see the threat around the corner that we're dealing with today. Okay?
So what's to keep a person, if they're communicating with Wyoming, saying, I want to migrate to Wyoming, what's to keep them from flying into Colorado and then just going anywhere they want?
Well, so their papers, their authorization would be of such because they, at this point in time, they don't have any ID. So their immigration papers are their identification. So when they go somewhere and they, you know, they're if they don't speak English, if they don't just melt in, and you know, you can let's say they're of an African descent or a Chinese descent. In other words, they kind of stand out because if you look at, I'll give you a good example. Where I live, it's almost monolithic. I mean, the out of all of the different cultures and races, the least is Mexican, but we have a very low presence of not just Hispanics, but we have a very low presence of Asians as well. The first highest race other than white is black in the Eastern Washington, Spokane area. And so as we kind of look at, you know, demographics, you can literally start looking. Sure, I believe in Wyoming, the demographics are pretty one way too, right? Mm-hmm. But if we look at Louisiana, where Sean is, I believe that they're probably all over the map, right, Sean?
So basically, it sounds like they wouldn't even be able to get ID unless they came to Wyoming.
Well, no, they would have their immigration. So they would have their immigration ID that allows them into the nation to travel here. And to basically, right. So they would probably have a passport from their country, giving them that identification, as well as their authority to enter to go to Wyoming. But we're talking about actually established a process that is mature right now, because that's what, mm-hmm. that would be a mature process to say that that person has to have notification and some documentation to where they're going, where they're migrating to. Mm-hmm. Right, so I'm actually adding a level of maturity that doesn't even exist right now. But that's sure, what would have to happen. As the states take this back, they go, okay, now how are we going to do this? So this becomes an issue on the table that says, okay, we need to manage this to make sure that we're getting what we want. Because right now the federal government is determining that there's millions of Indian engineers that are going to come to America.
Mm-hmm.
And many states may not want that. Many states may say, no, we'd rather have these engineers, or we would rather choose for ourselves whether we want engineers or whether we want laborers. Because I'm going to tell you, even though we do want, everybody wants engineers because the big corporate conglomerates, that's what they want. They want well-educated people that can deal with bioengineering, chemical engineering, or systems engineering, because engineering is a huge, it is the future of government and where government will wield power. As a matter of fact, I saw a video from the Hoover Institute that was talking about the importance of America maintaining dominance over biometric engineering or bioengineering and all these other forms of engineering. Because China right now is creating all the engineers along with India or these other nations. And they do that because they inflict engineering upon people, if that makes sense. In other words, you know, their statist governments make sure that those people are going into those chairs and they pay for that. Where here in America, to become an engineer takes a lot of time and effort. In other words, you have to be good in math. This is not a cakewalk. It's not like, you know, these what these kids are coming away with is digital creators, you know, YouTube video creators out of college. I mean, most kids are coming out of college today out of America are worthless degrees. So the question is, what are we going to do and how are we going to fix our problem? I think the education system is probably more critical in fixing, because if we actually improve our education system, we will be able to put butts in those engineering seats, all of them, because we'll be changing the paradigm instead of teaching kids to become dependent on government and be dependent on America. So anyway, I digress. Any comments, Sean? No comments from Sean. Okay. All right. So let's go ahead and dive into, because we do want to get through the content. I mean, I think these conversations are good. They're important because bottom line, as we become aware of the problems, we have to understand that they got to get onto the table and how we need to examine them and how we can address them as problems and move forward. So go ahead and let's read Resolution 6 now. Go ahead.
Did you want me to do that, or are you?
No, this is Sean. So, Sean, you're up for Resolution 6. We don't have Sean with us. Tammy, you're up now. Go ahead and read Resolution 6.
Okay. Resolve that the imprisonment of a person under the protection of the laws of this Commonwealth on his failure to obey the simple order of the President to depart out of the United States as it is undertaken by said act entitled An Act Concerning Aliens, is contrary to the Constitution, one amendment to which has provided that no person shall be deprived of liberty without due process of law, and that another having provided that in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to public trial by an impartial jury, to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. The same act undertaking to authorize the President to remove a person out of the United States who is under the protection of the law on his own suspicion, without accusation, without jury, without public trial, without confrontation of the witnesses against him, without heeding witnesses in his favor, without defense, without counsel, is contrary to the provision also of the Constitution, is therefore not law, but utterly void and of no force, that transferring the power of judging any person who is under the protection of the laws from the courts to the President of the United States, as is undertaken by the same act concerning aliens, is against the article of the Constitution, which provides that the judicial power of the United States shall be vested in courts, the judges of which shall hold their offices during good behavior, and that the said act is void for that reason also. And it is further to be noted that this transfer of judiciary power is to that magistrate of the general government who already possesses all the executive and the negative on all legislative powers.
Okay, so this resolution points out that GR is wrong. Well, maybe not wrong. So what this points out, Jefferson, do you see where he's arguing due process?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He is literally arguing that these people have come to this state with the agreement with the state to migrate and become a resident and become a citizen, eventually become a citizen. In other words, these people have come here in good faith and invested their money and so forth to come and be here and, you know, to buy land and to, you know, start making, you know, a foothold into their community and getting a foothold into becoming a citizen, that the federal government has no authority to intervene between that agreement between the individual and that state to deport them.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, this is a legitimate, this is a legitimate person who followed the process at what, albeit weak back in those days. But as we mature, we would have to actually delineate where true, I'll call it due process, is afforded. If you come here going through, see, the reason the federal government has been giving due process because they've been culpable in calling these people to come here. And so, you know, if they give them a fair trial, then more people will come here. However, if all of a sudden we were doing what we were supposed to do, we stopped inviting them to come here and we started sending all invaders back, and next time they say, hey, as a matter of fact, if we sent all invaders back, because Trump is even entertaining the constitutionality of whether these people could become citizens. Because they can't. They never immigrated. Mm-hmm. They never immigrated. And right. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, right. I'm agreeing. They didn't. They never immigrated.
Okay, because
they just invaded.
Because they never immigrated. Those people who were granted citizenship or some protected status by the federal government is all unconstitutional. This is where Trump could literally change the face of the direction of the United States, because I believe that if all of a sudden people that had things here and they stand to lose everything, this is almost like the Tory acts. You've come here and you've been granted citizenship, but you've by an entity, by the government that doesn't have the authority to do that, right? Because the grant of citizenship comes from the states, not the federal government. The federal government, I talked about this when Sean was here. By the way, he's not with us anymore. That's why we were calling for Sean in the wilderness, and we got no answer. And so he's lost out there, folks, but he's doing good things. Just be assured. And if it's of real urgency, hopefully the prayers in our hearts will be with him. Anyway, Godspeed, Sean. With that all put aside. When we look at this overreach, when we look at the federal government and their involvement in all of this, when these people, because I'm bringing up the Tory acts, when these people have created, you know, bought a home, they've got property and so forth, that was all under unconstitutional, it was basically duplicit. We've been duplicit, we've been giving them money and everything else. There is no such thing as reparations. When government does something wrong, then, you know, we actually have to get government right. Because of slavery, there is no such thing as reparations for slavery under our Constitution. We had to get the Constitution, and we had to get government right. So these people who received what we would call, you know, unconstitutional money, that's not theirs. In other words, they lose everything. They lose their property, they get to keep the shirt on their back, and they get deported back to their home state and town. Home nation and town, I should say. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it needs to be. So when all of a sudden the people, you were a citizen. How are you back here now? Well, come to find out, they had no authority to make me a citizen. And come to find out, they had no authority to let me buy property and let me, you know, exist legally within their world. And because I was there illegally in their world, because I was fraudulently a part of their system, they got rid of me because I was a fraud. And then all the people in these nations that see these people coming back with nothing, that had something, whether that was with Reagan or before. I mean, anybody can have a cold heart, and anybody can actually go black and white letter of the law. I believe we have a spirit of the law. I believe that when Reagan created the one-time amnesty, he was duped, obviously. But I believe that under the progressive agenda from Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Obama, and then Biden, and now we've got Trump. Trump has been the outlier. He's wanted to do something with this. I think he has legitimate standing to actually undo all the fraud. What this means, folks, is we may have 50 million invaders, but we've got people that have been fraudulently legitimized. I'm not necessarily looking for vengeance, but I'm looking that we need to set, you know, the rule of law needs to be not a cold-hearted, bad thing, but it needs to be applied. And I believe that sending people back to their homes and allowing those people to diligently come back through. Here's the problem. There are many people that were granted this crap. This goes to the story of how many people have you known that have given their kids a car? That, you know, they not like they're really super rich or anything else. They've struggled and so forth, and they've given their kids property. They've given their kids a car, something nice. Nine times out of ten, those kids... Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, lots of people.
It happens all the time, and almost every time, it's very common that those kids don't appreciate what they've been given. They don't appreciate, they don't build upon it. It's kind of like the three servants that have received talents. Only one of the three actually magnifies his talents. The other two barely do anything. And so they are basically chastised by the Lord, where the one that magnified his talents completely, you know, was, you know, blessed by the Lord. The point is that many of these people that came here that had these opportunities handed to them and then did nothing, they never learned the language, they never integrated, they would literally be cutting their own throats, because I would see it compassionate to send them back and say, because you've had some investment time here, you know, we will give you an opportunity to basically take a citizenship test to give you a chance to re-entry back into the United States. But that doesn't just get disclosed until everybody's been deported. And so you either you did everything you needed to do to actually become a legitimate citizen, you studied, you took up language and everything else. And I don't like talking about this, because I think that that should be the compassionate bar. You know, if you were a good servant and you came here and you had the right spirit about it, then I think we'd bring you back.
Yeah.
I think that there's some people.
Yeah,
this
is a hard topic to talk about, because people, you know, a lot of people see a person as really cold if they.
Yes, but everybody else that came here. That, you know, basically took advantage and maintained on the dole, and they just, you know, became activists for the communist movements, La Raza, those types of things, and became a parasite living in the United States for whatever state, whatever cause that you're here for. Then you get deported, and that's it, because you won't be able, because, I mean, the odds are probably huge that they never did the due diligence. And I'm telling you, I'm getting more and more intolerant towards those people who do not do the due diligence. Now, we're out of time. We need to get going. So we'll be back, and we'll start hitting Resolution 7 moving forward with the Kentucky resolutions. Thank you so much. Any final comment? Nope. Just like with what happened with Sean yesterday, there's literally no time. I apologize, Tammy, and so... We will have you back, and when we do have you back, we will be able to get that comment. I'll make sure we give you that time. Anyway, folks, as you can see, it's about the rule of law and full compliance to the Constitution. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.